Welcome to Category Leaders, where we go inside the minds of executives and innovators shaping the future of B2B growth. I'm Eli Grasserfidi, co-founder of Maya Digital, where we help B2B companies and executives build LinkedIn authority and drive life-changing opportunities. On this podcast, I sit down with founders, CEOs, and C-level leaders who are redefining their categories, the innovators turning executive presence into pipeline growth, competitive advantage, and market leadership. If you are a decision maker looking to scale your influence, attract top talent, and position yourself as a go-to voice in your industry, you are in the right place. Let's dive in. Hello, today I am joined by David Newman. He has helped over 800 entrepreneurs generate more than $2 billion. He is the author of the Do It series and the new book, Market Eminence. And he's one of the sharpest minds when it comes to positioning experts as the obvious choice in their market. David, welcome to Category Leaders.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. We're going to have some fun.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to our conversation. So let's jump in. You've helped hundreds of experts build their authority, and you make this distinction between being well-known and being market eminent. Yeah. For B2B founders listening right now, what's the difference and why does it matter more than ever?
So that's a great, great question. Being well-known, and also another term that we can address now or later, is thought leadership. Right. It is easy to get well known, and it is easier than ever to be in the thought leader category. But what gets people noticed and what brings in revenue, clients, investors, partners, talent, media, what gets them invited onto podcasts, it needs to be more than that. So when I wrote this latest book, the Market Eminence book that you were kind enough to mention, I was looking to answer the question, what does it take to get truly noticed and respected in today's hyper-busy, AI-fueled, crazy world? So it's a combination of three things, really. One is absolutely visibility. So visibility is about being well-known, but also being well-known to a very specific group of people. So it's not just general visibility. It's not celebrity visibility. It is visibility to the exact audience that you want to reach and the exact audience that you want to influence, come have work for you, buy from you, invest with you, possibly even acquire you. So visibility is one third of the pie. The second piece that I think is missing when we start talking about well-known and we start talking about thought leadership is this level of respect. And respect comes from intimacy and familiarity, where people get the idea that you have X-ray vision into their soul, and you know exactly what they're up against, you know exactly what they're going through, you have such intimate, granular, detailed knowledge of their pains, problems, heartaches, challenges, goals, dreams, aspirations, and you are totally speaking their language, so that when they come across a piece of content, when they come across your latest LinkedIn post, they say, oh my God, wait, I could not believe, when I saw your LinkedIn post, I thought you had installed video cameras in our meeting rooms, I thought you'd install listening devices on our phones, because man, you know exactly what's going on in here. And that sense of respect comes from knowing their problems and knowing their situation better than they even know it themselves. The third part of this, so we have visibility, we have respect through this level of intimacy, and then the third level of this is brand preference. And the way that you drive brand preference is a combination of positioning and differentiation so that people think it's actually risky, dangerous, and dumb to buy from anyone else. Risky, dangerous, and dumb. Because you are not only the obvious choice, you are not only the best choice, you are the safest choice, and you are the choice that resonates with their values. So you put those three pieces together, that market eminence goes way beyond being well-known, and it goes way beyond what most people are doing today with their thought leadership.
I absolutely love that, David. It's as if you went exactly into my head and was saying the things that I've been thinking about. I've been preparing for a keynote that I'm giving tomorrow. And it's,
I wrote that for you.
I felt it. I'm really talking about that and everything, those three steps. It's like, okay, that's exactly what LinkedIn can allow you to do, to get in front of the right people and to build that trust with them. You called it respect, but I think you can also really call it trust. And I think that's super important in B2B today. Is really having that trust of your audience, that trust of your buyer and the people in front of you. And that takes a long time, right? That's not something that happens over with one post or over the next day.
That's right.
So what you said is really interesting because it also connects to something, you know, we were talking about being visible, and to be visible, you need to have content. And a lot of the content, you know, is the tips and the how-to posts, but you actually argue that the how-to is essentially dead because of AI, which is a, you know, AI is every out there. So it's a big claim. What should founders be doing then instead?
So I just want to reinforce what you just said, because it's 1,000% true. How-to content is dead. AI can create how-to content way better than you or I or anyone else. And that has become totally commoditized. So if you look on LinkedIn, if you look on any platform, if you look in the newsletter, Substack, whatever it is, we are cranking out AI-generated how-to content by the terabytes, by the zillions of terabytes. I'm not sure how much a zillion terabytes is, but it's a lot. It's a lot. So I'm going to give you three different kinds of content that you can immediately start putting into your LinkedIn feed, and you will immediately start getting way better results. So we're leaving how-to behind, and we're moving from how-to content to how-to-think content. How-to is based on information. How-to is your typical 7 steps for this, 5 keys to that. How to think is a much higher level, insight-based, not information-based, but insight-based piece of content that only you as a human being can create. And I'll tell you why. It's based on your own personal lived experience. It's based on what you've done and what you've seen and what you've learned, what works, what doesn't work, what's wrong with the world, what's upside down, what's crazy, and all of the different things that you've gone through with yourself, with your company, with your clients, with your customers. So it is all the battle scars. It is all the war stories. It is all the dead ends and the brick walls that you've run into. And it's like talking to a sage. It's like talking to a wise elder. Even if you're 31 years old, you can still be a wise elder in your content. And that level of how to think is so much more valued in the B2B world. It is so much more attention worthy. C-suite executives, your prospects, your customers, they are overloaded with how to, and they are desperately hungry for how to think. So how to think content is part one. Second kind of content that you can put into your LinkedIn tomorrow, what to believe. So belief shifting content. Belief shifting as far as myths and truths, separating the wheat from the chaff, separating the signal from the noise. What are some just plain old myths in your industry? What are some half-truths that are even more dangerous than the myths because they kind of sound true, but they're not? So they're either outdated, outmoded, or they're, you know, totally irrelevant. And or they might even be hurting. They might be hurting your target market, and they might be holding back your clients and customers and prospects. So that level of content that is about how to believe, the belief shifting, the what to believe rather. I'm getting so excited now, I can barely contain myself, but that is also a very strong call out to your very best customers, prospects, team, media, investors, etc. Third level. Third kind of content that you can put out on LinkedIn starting tomorrow is where to focus for what's coming next. So I think every one of us, every CEO, every founder, every business expert needs to be a little bit of a trend spotter and a future caster. So what's coming down the road, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, that if your target market had some advanced warning, they either knew that there was an opportunity that's emerging or that there's a danger hiding around the corner. And if you are that early warning system, your level of respect, your level of visibility and shareability is going to go way, way up. Now, when I say this, I'll say this to an executive team or a C-suite boardroom meeting, and we're doing a strategic work session. I always get the hand. Usually it's the CFO. The hand goes up. Okay, Bob, what do you got? I'm really nervous about these predictions. What happens if we're wrong? I said, Bob, do you subscribe to some emails? Do you read some trade journals and publications? Yes. Do you ever see these trend spotting, future casting type of articles and content all the time? Do you like them? Do you respect them? Do you enjoy them? Do you pass them along? Oh my God, it's really valuable. It's really insightful. Awesome. When's the last time that you looked back 6 months or 12 months and you said, hey, I got this thing in late 2024, and you know what? Out of these 10 predictions, only 4 came true and 6 were complete nonsense. Have you ever done that? And then Bob, the CFO, looks at me and goes, I see what you're saying. Right, because nobody ever looks back. No one says, oh, you know what? 14 months ago, you were wrong about this, this, and this. What they say in the moment is thank you for that insight. Thank you for that guidance. Thank you for that early warning. We would have made a different decision if we hadn't read your piece on LinkedIn. That's how you get hired. That's how you get booked.
I love that actionable advice, David. So we're shifting from a here's how to do it, here's how to think about it, which naturally means that you have a point of view. Which
yes.
leads me to the next part of your work, which I absolutely love, David, the electromagnetic fence. You say repelling the wrong people is just as valuable as attracting the right ones. But most people don't want to turn anyone off. So how do you actually get comfortable with that?
Yes. So this is one of my favorite things to walk clients through. And this usually happens in the first hour, first 90 minutes, because I'm banging my shoe on the table and I'm saying, listen, we got to strongly pull in all your best fits, and we are going to build this electromagnetic fence around your business that has two polarities. It has the positive that pulls them in and the negative force, the repulsive force that pushes out and repels all the bad fits. And I'll say that a couple times throughout the course of the morning, and then invariably we get to rolling up our sleeves and say, okay, let's look at our point of view, let's look at our belief-shifting content, let's look at our future-casting predictions, and someone says, well, can we go back to the part where we're repelling people, where we're turning people away? I said, sure. They go, I'm really nervous about that. I'm really nervous that, we're going to say something, we're going to offend someone, we're going to turn away a big possible investor, we're going to turn away a big possible customer, and it makes me really nervous. I said, okay, well, let me go back and reiterate what I said. Strongly attract the best fits in all those stakeholder areas, and strongly repel the bad fits. The only people we're repelling are the bad fits. And they go, yeah, but I'm still nervous. I said, okay, fine. Listen, tell you what. Have you ever had a nightmare customer from hell? Oh, yeah, totally. Ugh. Okay, great. Let me put on the whiteboard behind me. You tell me, what was it about that customer that made them the nightmare customer from hell? They say, oh my gosh, well, they didn't take any of our advice, they never showed up on calls, they didn't share our values, they weren't in alignment with what our company is all about, they were difficult to work with, they second-guessed every invoice, it was just a total disaster. So I'm writing down all those things. Then I say, have you ever had a nightmare employee? Someone who you hired, you came in, and they turned out to be a Jekyll and Hyde, completely different person than the one you thought you hired. Oh my gosh, have we ever had terrible employees? Yes, great. Give me the list. They come in late. They leave early. They don't share our values. They're not in alignment. Nobody wants to work with them. They're a bully. They're a jerk. They're an egomaniac. They try and take credit for things that's not okay. So now I have like a dozen things on this whiteboard. And I say, when I talk about repelling the bad fits, it's these people back here on the whiteboard with these characteristics, behaviors, traits, and beliefs. These are the people that we're repelling. How do you feel about that? And I will look around the room, and you can just see it in their body language. Their shoulders start to soften. They get this misty, dreamy, wonderful look in their eye. They're looking at the board going, we never have to deal with any of those kinds of people again. And they go, that would be great. And I say, I know, welcome to market eminence. So the only people you're ever going to repel are those kinds of people. And once they get a visceral sense of the, when I say bad fits, what's really a bad fit? It's the non-believers, the non-alignment, the non-workers, the non-contributors, the people that are here for all the wrong reasons that they are pushing away. And then I just end it with, you know, here's the truth. If you don't risk turning some people off, the wrong people that you don't want, if you don't risk turning some people off, you will never turn anybody on. And then it starts to click and they start to get it. And then the shields drop and then the resistance starts to melt away. And then we can get some amazing work done.
Right. Yeah. It's just like the saying, if you market to everyone, you market to no one. Right.
Yes.
So especially, you know, a lot of people, you know, if I take it to the LinkedIn sense and their content, you know, people are upset that their content isn't viral and they're not getting tons of impressions and all the engagement and they just want to be viral. But that's not important, because if you're viral, that means that you're speaking to the masses, and it's much better to speak to the right audience, to the specific audience, which may get less engagement or less impressions, but you'll get the right impressions and the right eyeballs and the people that you need to reach out.
Well, and I'm sure you share this with your clients too. LinkedIn is a very unusual platform in that you can put out a post that directly addresses your economic buyer's biggest pains, problems, headaches, heartaches. You might only get a handful of comments and a handful of likes, because economic buyers, they will see your content, they will read your content, they may even pass along the link to your content. But they will never like, they will never comment, they're silent. They're in stealth mode. So sometimes I have clients that do this. I'm not the LinkedIn expert that you are, but I have clients that will say this to me about LinkedIn. You know, they're doing a LinkedIn live. They're doing like a 3-minute video every Monday morning or something like that. And they say, I just got a call from a CEO who said, you know, I see your stuff on LinkedIn. And I had no idea who this guy was. He never liked, he never commented, he never did anything that I could see, but he was absorbing my content and it made an impression on him. So he called. In this particular case, this CEO did end up becoming a client of my client. So that was a happy, happy ending to that story. But you have to understand, the content that really lands will sometimes not, to your point about we're not going viral here, we are truth-telling. And that LinkedIn post is like a beacon or a lighthouse that is illuminating all the dangerous rocks, right? It's illuminating also the safe passage of how to get around the obstacles, the traps, and all of those things. People really, really value that. And high-level executive buyers, high-level stakeholders typically don't engage. It's not like Facebook. It's not like some of these other social platforms. There's a lot of lurking, and there's a lot of C-suite lurking. So if your content that you put all this energy and fire and rebellion and craziness into, if you're not getting the traction that you thought, don't take the numbers at face value.
David, are you sure you're not bugging my phone or
in
my
house? I'm totally bugging your phone, dude. I am in your system. I'm hearing all your calls.
Because you're taking word for word. This is exactly what we've been saying. The economic buyers and the general crowd on LinkedIn in general are silent lurkers. Everyone just thinks about themselves. Everyone listening to this episode, how many posts do you read on LinkedIn where you've gotten value, but you just don't have the time or know what to say or want to say anything, and you just continue on with your day? And that makes sense. So of course, as we go up the ladder in the executive and with the economic buyers, so even more so, they're there, they're doing their due diligence. And I think what's also important to remember in this point, David, is even if people aren't seeing the post when it goes out, people are still doing their due diligence after. They can come to your profile, they can see that content, and again, they're probably not going to engage with it, to which then on our end, we don't have a signal and we're with our heads down thinking, oh, our message didn't resonate with anyone. My co-founder actually just had a post, 22 likes, 1 repost. Not so exciting when in social metrics, right? But he had two CEOs reach out to him. What's more important, those two CEOs or the 22 likes? I'll take the two CEOs any day. So I love that you mentioned that and you brought it up because it's super important. We have these conversations all the time. David, I know you have this exercise where you ask clients to name the elephant in the room. Yes. That one thing where their whole industry knows is true, but nobody wants to say it out loud. And I guess, you know, maybe it's, you know, from the fear of repelling, etc. Could you give us a real example of someone who actually did that and then what happened to their business because of it?
Sure. Well, the example, one of my favorite examples is a professional services firm that rants and rails against hourly billing. Because 95% of the professional services world, consulting, IT, accounting, law firms, are all tied to the mighty billable hour. And if there was one firm, let's say it was your firm, that said, we don't believe in hourly billing, and maybe even that the hero image on the website or their professional headline on LinkedIn says, no hourly billing, right? No surprises, just results. And they are a results-driven professional services firm. And then some of their posts might say things like, we are much more concerned about getting you to your destination than in running the taxi meter. So first thing that would happen is all their competition, all the other professional services firms, would lose their minds. Like, oh my God, did you hear about what they're not doing hourly billing. They stopped doing hourly billing. Now, you know, we're going to be saying, hey, can you stop doing hourly billing? It's going to put all this pressure on us. And now they're going to eat our lunch and all of these things. But not only is that a client-facing message, imagine if it was also a talent-facing message, where the employees, all the top talent that they want to recruit away from the other law firms, they say, well, you know, while you're working 14-hour days, while you're coming in at 7 a.m. and leaving at 10 p.m., the reason that that's happening is that you're responsible for hourly billing. What if you could come in at 8 or 8:30 and still be home in time for dinner? Because we don't do hourly billing, we do value-based billing at our law firm, you can actually have a family life. You can see your spouse. You can see your children. You can have something called a weekend without necessarily checking email 17 times a day from your kid's basketball game. And imagine, is that going to attract the low-level and mediocre talent, or is that going to attract the top-tier, the cream-of-the-crop talent who says, wait a second, I can make just as much money or maybe even more money working for this law firm that does not tie my income to the hours on the clock? And or I could go back in and work at, you know, how much is your hourly rate? Well, we're $700 an hour. How much is your hourly rate? Well, we're $800 an hour. Oh, so I'm going to go get a $100 an hour raise. Or should I get a $1,000 an hour raise and still be able to be home in time for dinner? Now, let's look at an acquisitions or an exit strategy here. There's all kinds of law firms that an acquirer could buy or invest in. And there's one that has totally turned the common practice in its industry on its head. And they're the ones getting the headlines, they're the ones being interviewed, they're the ones on the podcast, they're the ones on the stages, they're the ones at the conferences talking about the way they're revolutionizing the legal industry, both for the benefit of their clients and the benefit of their associates and partners. Who do you think is going to get a better multiple? Is it going to be the traditional hourly billing law firm, or is it going to be this law firm that's the pioneer and the trailblazer? In the book, I call this the contrarian slant, right? The contrarian slant is what is a very common accepted practice that you feel is completely wrong, and I mean completely wrong, but you've never mentioned it publicly. You've never ranted against it publicly. You can choose something small to start with. Does not have to be reinventing your entire business model or revenue model like I just gave you in my example, but I recommend doing two more things in addition to this. The second thing to develop your contrarian slant and maybe fuel your next LinkedIn post, think about what is a harsh truth about your industry that clients are desperate for someone to finally acknowledge openly. So for example, again, let's go back to the law firm just for fun because I like picking on law firms. Why does a Xerox photocopy cost me $8? When your staff makes a photocopy, I'm getting charged $8 per photocopy. That seems like a lot, right? So they're padding the bill, they're upcharging, they're doing all of these semi-unethical practices. And the third thing, that's sort of like the elephant in the room, right? That no one likes it. Everyone's talking about it behind closed doors. But if someone finally acknowledges it, you're like, yes, why are they charging $8 for a photocopy? And then the third thing is, what have clients, when clients come to you, you are often not the first service provider, software company, etc., that they've connected with, that they've tried to solve their problem with. When they come in the door, what do they complain about their previous provider, right? What is a common practice? How have they been bruised, injured, let down, or disappointed in the past? Because when people come to you, they say, well, it looks like you already have an agency. It looks like you're already using this software. It looks like you're already hooked in with this law firm. I'm curious, what's prompting the call to talk to us? Well, I'll tell you, they screwed this up. They let me down. They really botched my situation. They're not responsive. And so all of those things are fuel for innovation or reinvention, that if your firm, if your company does that differently and has a different lens and a different perspective and a different way to take care of your customers and clients, they will immediately resonate with that. So that's what I call the customer refugee set of questions, right? They're fleeing this other service provider, and they're coming to you as the safe harbor and the solution for what they would like to finally do. The other folks let them down, disappointed them, underserved them, or overpromised, or whatever they did. Listen to those customer refugees. Listen to what they feel is missing, funky, broken, and sad with your competitors, what's missing, funky, broken, and sad in your industry, and start to make baby steps towards changing that, and then talking about changing it, and how you're changing it, why you're changing it, and why you are the go-to in your industry, because you don't do what all the other folks do in that category of burned, disappointed, let down, etc.
Super actionable. Now, I want to shift gears slightly, because you said something in another interview that I heard recently that really stuck with me. You said that if you could go back in your career, one thing that you would do differently, you'd focus entirely on retention over acquisition. That's counterintuitive probably to some of the founders or people listening to the episode who are obsessed getting new clients. So yeah. Why is retention the new acquisition?
Man, oh man, this is such a great topic. So again, this is not my expertise, but I will point you to a fantastic book and a fantastic expert. His name is Joey Coleman, and the book is Never Lose a Customer Again. And when I read this book a few years ago, it was just head slapper moment after head slapper moment. The wake-up call for everyone listening is the following question. Where would your company be today if everyone that ever did business with you is still doing business with you today? Every past client is a current client. Every past customer is still an active buyer today. And when people sit down and do that math, they go, oh my God, we would be 10 times as big. We would be 5 times as big. Or even if it's not 10 times as big, 5 times as big, we would be 3 times more profitable. Because the reason that we're constantly on this client acquisition, bigger, bigger, more, more treadmill, obviously, it's because you're losing clients, right? So if you have a leaky bucket, how much time, energy, money are you spending putting water into the bucket only to lose 10%, 20%, 30% of that water every single year, every single year? So this is a combination of things. Not only is it serving your customers, expanding your services, maybe moving to a subscription model, but this is also about painting a journey for your customers. So I'll give you an example. I have a client right now who's a management consultant, and the very first conversation she has with a prospect, somewhere early on, she works in the following phrase: I take my clients on a multi-year journey. That's the magic phrase. I take my clients on a multi-year journey from, and then she describes kind of the pains, problems, headaches, heartaches of what they're typically dealing with, to, and then all the outcomes, the results, the benefits, the ultimate end destination. When she paints it that way, two different things happen. Number one, the client's like, oh, this isn't a short-term thing. We'll be working with this person for a good number of years, at least. And then the profound change from the first set of pains, problems, heartaches, headaches, challenges to the second set, and again, very intimate, very specific, very customized to what that person just said, right? What they said they wanted, what they said is missing, what they said they're really aiming for. All of those outcomes, results, destination, achievements, accomplishments, metrics, whatever it is. When you draw those two sets of bullets so far apart, people naturally think, well, that's not going to be a quick fix, right? That's going to take at least a couple years. If you're a horrendously overweight person, right? You're 150 pounds overweight. You have to lose 150 pounds. And someone says, hey, you want to try our 30-day diet? No. It's not, right? The sense of reality breaks at that point. It says, listen, if you want to lose 150 pounds, we are on a 24-month journey. We are going to get there in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it takes. The person knows it's not a quick fix. The person knows it's not a one-time thing, that they are entering in a long-term relationship to create a long-term solution to dramatically improve their personal or professional life. So just use that phrase. You know, we typically take our clients on a multi-year journey from ABC to XYZ, and then that's the beginning of the retention conversation. But I truly believe that it's such a sobering wake-up call. Imagine if everyone that ever gave you money was still actively giving you money today. And that's what gets people into what do we need to do to retain subscription model, ongoing, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. How can we expand our services? How can we reach back further in the client journey or move things even further ahead down the road so that clients are not, you know, they don't think they're fixed in 90 days or 6 months? And doing that is going to have a dramatic impact on your profitability.
Yeah, I agree with you so much there. I think retention is something that is too overlooked by people and something they're always focused on, you know, the new leads and looking on everything else in other parts of their business. And I think retention, solving that isn't only a direct influence on profitability, but it also says a lot about the service and in your company and the values and
yes,
the relationship and the trust and the respect that you have with them. And I think when you really dive deep into that and how you can fix it, you're not only going to be more successful, you know, on a monetary, but you also be more successful on a much greater basis than just on a financial basis. All right, David, I want to end with something that people can act on immediately. And I know you have a great acronym for this, GOYA, get off your ass. So yes, for everyone listening right now, what's the one thing you want them to GOYA and do within the next 24 hours of hearing this episode?
I would go back to our little mini exercise about how to think, what to believe, or how to get ready for what's coming next. In the next 24 hours, put a piece of content in one of those three categories on LinkedIn, and then let us know. Tag us, or you know, send a screenshot, or do whatever it is you want to do, and then we will both amplify it on our ends.
Yes, yes. I love that, David. David, this has been packed with value. If people want to go deeper, where should they find you?
The first place to go, probably the best place to go relative to our conversation today, is simply marketeminence.com. If you go there, you can get all the free companion tools, downloads, worksheets, and videos that come with the book. You wouldn't even have to buy the book, by the way, if you don't want to. Just get the freebies. And if you're inspired later to buy the book, great. If not, great. But marketeminence.com. And then the rest of the empire, blog, podcast, all kinds of fun things are at my main website, which is doitmarketing.com.
David Newman, everybody, go grab Market Eminence. We'll have it linked everything below in the show notes. Thank you for listening to Category Leaders. Thank you again, David Newman. You were fabulous.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Category Leaders. If you are a B2B founder, executive, or leader with a story worth sharing, I'd love to have you on the show. Head to categoryleaders.team-maia.com to apply. Found value in this episode? Here's how you can help. Share it, take a screenshot, post it on LinkedIn, or send it to someone who needs to hear this. And if you know a leader who should be featured, tag them. I'd love to connect. Please subscribe to Category Leaders so you don't miss the next conversation. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn or visit team-maia.com to learn more about what we do. Thanks for being here. See you on the next episode.